This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, welcome to Radio Reading Services weekly edition of AARP The Magazine. I'm Joe Bickers. Our first story today from the Upfront section, Chef Specials. How do you find a good restaurant while traveling? Try these tips from the kitchen. Hit a farmer's market. Across dozens of stalls, markets give you a sense of a community's food scene. As you browse, talk to the vendors. They often supply restaurants and are likely to know which are best, says Richard Crespin, executive chef of the Kempton Rowan Palm Springs Hotel in California. Ask your server. When you're at a restaurant, ask your server where you should eat next. Once I was in New Orleans, and I asked the waiter what his favorite spot to eat authentic local food was, says Chef Mandy Dixon, owner-manager of Tutka Bay Lodge and La Baleem Cafe in Homer, Alaska. He didn't say much at first, but then came by later and slipped me a folded-up piece of paper. Written on it was his favorite ribs joint. Check reservation sites. Skip TripAdvisor and Yelp. You'll likely find better restaurant recommendations on reservation sites such as OpenTable and Resy, says Chef Janos Wilder, owner of Studio Janos in Tucson, Arizona. From a chef's perspective, more serious diners leave reviews on reservation sites, he says. Follow the locals. Dixon visits TikTok or Instagram and searches for keywords such as Best Brunch New Orleans or Best Soup Seattle for short videos with recommendations. Thomas Melvin, executive chef at Vita in Indianapolis, says, word of mouth is, in my opinion, still the best recommendation. That article was written by Aaron Gifford. Our next story, hands off. What to wear to keep valuables safe on trips. The first rule of foiling thieves when traveling, always carry everything in front of you. So advises travel influencer Johnny Jett, adding, never use a backpack or have your stuff behind you or in a back pocket. Jett, real name John Descala, who runs the JohnnyJett.com travel site, suggests these items. Pocketed jacket or vest. I have a jacket that has 20 plus pockets. With pockets inside and outside, there's a spot for just about anything. iPads, passports, sunglasses, a bottle of water, and more. Crossbody purse. It sits diagonally across your body with the bag in front. Get a purse with a stainless steel base strap. People can come up behind you and slash a regular strap. A money belt. This standby is a great option, like a thin fanny pack you wear under clothing. Safe wallet. A wallet that blocks radio frequency identification, RFID technology, thwarts thieves' gadgets that can read your credit card info. Our next story from the Upfront section, a race like no other. The Kentucky Derby celebrates its 150th annual running at Louisville's Churchill Downs on Saturday, May 4th. Some things you may not know. More than 125,000 mint juleps are consumed at Churchill Downs over 2 days, Friday's Kentucky Oaks Day and Saturday's Derby Day. Picking the winner used to be easier. The smallest field was 3 horses in 1892 and 1905. In modern times, the race routinely starts with 20 in the field. How much money is bet on Derby Day? In 2023, a record $288.7 million was wagered across 14 races. The best betting payday for a winner was in 1913 when Donna Rail went off at 91-1. Horse racing is called the sport of kings, but it has attracted presidents too. Richard Nixon went to the Derby while in office. 8 former or soon-to-be presidents have also attended the race. The winning horse in the Run for the Roses gets a garland of red roses. It takes more than 400 flowers to make the fancy accessory. That article was written by Michael Grant. Continuing in the upfront section, no bars, no problem. You can still dial 911 in an emergency. Here's a scary scenario. You're driving alone in a remote area. Your car dies, and you can't get a cellular signal. Don't count out that phone just yet. Just because your particular service provider, say AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, has no cell towers in the area, doesn't mean you can't call for help. When you make a 911 call, your phone sends a signal to the nearest cell tower, regardless of your service provider, says AAA Senior Automotive Manager David Bennett. The Federal Communication Commission requires all cellular providers to accept all 911 calls, no matter the caller's phone plan. This also works with no service plan at all. An old deactivated phone can still call 911, but be aware that those phones won't give emergency call centers your location automatically. That article written by Celine Yeager. Get the big picture. Smartphones have sophisticated photography modes. When to use what? Portrait mode, what it does. Blurs the background while keeping the subject in focus. What it's for. Single subjects, where the camera locks in on one face. It's perfect for taking portraits of people or pets, says Kate Wesson, editor of the iPhone Photography School blog. Live photo, motion photo. What it does. Captures motion and sound before and after you hit the shutter. What it's for. It's great for capturing moments with subtle movement and sound that add to the memory, like the laughter of a loved one or the bubbling of a stream, Wesson says. Night mode. What it does. Works in low light. What it's for. Whether a city skyline at night, a dinner party in a dim room, or a nighttime landscape, night mode helps to maintain clarity and color in your photos, says Wesson. Panoramic. What it does, takes wide images. What it's for. Photos of sweeping landscapes, large groups of people, or tall objects such as buildings. I've even seen examples of people doing diagonal shots on long staircases, says Chris Malawat, a professional photographer from New York City. Just be sure to keep the lens level and move the device slowly. That article is from Lexi Pandel. A better to-do list. Apps to help you keep track. Today's technology means never having to rely on little scraps of paper as notes of stuff to get done. Every iPhone comes with the Reminders app pre-installed. For Android phones, download the free Google Keep app. Either can serve as a to-do list manager. To use reminders, tap on New Reminder, type in a title, such as Pick Up Johnny from School, and then any notes. Tap on Details to include a date, time, and location. Tap Add to save your reminder. Your phone will then sound an alert at the time you designated. After you get good at this, try the Add List option to create a to-do list. To use Google Keep, tap on the plus icon. Type in a title such as drop off tax documents at accountant. Then tap the box with the plus sign to include more relevant details. Click the back arrow to save the reminder. To create a to-do list of similar items, tap the checked box on the main page and then add tasks. And that was written by Jason R. Rich. Our next story from the upfront section, it's grow time. Add flavor to your life with herbs in pots. From a money-saving perspective, no garden plants pay you back as quickly as fresh herbs, which can cost several dollars for a small package at the market and often go bad before getting used up. Don't have a garden? Herbs flourish in pots. Here's how to grow four popular types. Basil. What you need. Organic potting soil in a pot at least 8 inches in diameter. Care. Keep it indoors until overnight temperatures are above 50 degrees. It grows well with 6 to 8 hours of daily sunlight. Keep the soil moist. Basil is a bit high maintenance. You need to harvest regularly, Franklin says. Once it flowers, it kind of stops producing leaves. So you always want to prune off flowers to encourage more leafy growth. Rosemary, what you need. A pot at least 12 inches in diameter and 12 inches deep with drainage holes. Use a 50-50 mix of potting soil and cactus mixed soil. Care. It can grow near a window, but try placing it outside during the day. Rosemary likes a good 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight, says Jill Franklin, general manager at Tellini's Nursery in Sacramento, California. It requires water just once a week. Rosemary likes to dry out between waterings, Franklin says. Time. What you need. A pot 6 to 8 inches in diameter with a drainage hole. Franklin says terracotta is good because it's porous and allows a lot of air to the roots. Potting soil is fine. Care. Water once a week. Add up to 2 inches of compost to the soil in spring and fall. The organic matter will work its way into the soil, provide beneficial nutrients, and enrich the soil, resulting in healthy growth, Franklin explains. Mint, what you need. A pot at least 12 inches in diameter with well-draining soil. Care. It can take as much sunlight as you can give it or as much shade, says Marvin Weber of Wilson Farm in Lexington, Massachusetts. Mint is extremely easy to grow. It's almost invasive. Pruning is important. It likes moisture, so water regularly. This article was written by Maisie Fernandez. Our next story from the upfront section, a safe home safe. Reconsider where you store your valuables. Thousands of bank branches close each year in America, and with many of them go safe deposit boxes. So now is the time to consider a home safe. There are two main categories of home safes, portable lockboxes and safes that you bolt into a wall or floor. Chris Magui, president of Magui Security Consulting, prefers the type you mount because there's no need to hide it. The idea of a safe is also to have it accessible. If you're older, you're not going to be climbing up on ladders necessarily or going up to the attic, he says. If it's bolted down, room placement doesn't matter. Burglars will see it, but they won't be able to get it. One more tip. Tell a family member or friend what's being kept in the safe and how to open it in case of an emergency. Our next story, where should your pet sleep? In a 2022 survey, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine found that 46% of Americans allow a pet to sleep in their bed at least sometimes. The pros and cons. Here, boy. Pets provide a sense of safety and comfort, says George Melillo, co-founder of Heart Plus Paw Veterinary Practice. Having your pet right beside you may provide added security for older people with diminished hearing. Down, boy. First, there's the unsanitary factor, and pets can be an intimacy blocker, says Michael J. Brees, founder of Sleep Doctor. Many animals do not understand what's going on and think some type of harm is being done. Continuing with the upfront section, from the read section, the big books of spring, novels, memoirs, and more. Tiny Slice. Despite her coiffed hair and social pals, Barbara Walters was at heart a rule breaker, even a revolutionary. Sometimes she didn't exactly break the rules, she simply ignored them, as though they couldn't possibly apply to her. Women can't do serious interviews, just watch her. From Rule Breaker, The Life and Times of Barbara Walters by Susan Page, out April 23rd. Tasty Delights. In her third cookbook, Indulge, Delicious and Decadent Dishes to Enjoy and Share, actress Valerie Bertinelli, age 63, writes about how she's foregone denial and now relishes every step of preparing and eating her food. Mouth-watering recipes include treats like roasted tomato panzanella, spinach ricotta grilled cheese, and maple pecan scones. Reviews. The Demon of Unrest, a saga of Hubris, Heartbreak, and Heroism at the Dawn of the Civil War by Eric Larson. The author of nonfiction page-turners, The Devil in the White City, uses a colorful cast of characters to illustrate how the country reached a boiling point in the months before the Civil War began. Out April 30th. James by Percival Everett. Everett brilliantly revisits Mark Twain's Adventures of Huckleberry Finn from the perspective of the enslaved Jim, James actually, who's on the run with the presumed dead Huck. The story of their wild trip down the Mississippi is full of wry social critique, humor, and suspense. Celebrity Lives. Whoopi Goldberg, age 68, writes in Bits and Pieces, May the 7th, about her upbringing, when she was Karen Johnson in the New York City projects with her loving mother and brother, both the kind of people who give you the confidence to become exactly who you want to be. And Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Michael McDonald, age 72, teamed up with friend Paul Reiser, age 68, to pen his memoir. What a Fool Believes, out May 21st, capturing the highs and lows of his life in music, including his times with the Doobie Brothers and Steely Dan. Next, from the upfront section, now playing in theaters. Ghostbusters, The Frozen Empire. Celebrate the 40th anniversary of Ghostbusters with the latest film in the franchise written by Jason Reitman, son of the 1984 version's director, Ivan Reitman. A new generation of Spectre catchers, Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd, age 55, join the original gang, Bill Murray, age 73, Dan Aykroyd, 71, and Ernie Hudson, 78, at the old firehouse to save Manhattan from a deep freeze and ectoplasmic baddies. And this time the receptionist from the first film, Annie Potts, 71, gets to don a Ghostbuster costume too. But she doesn't carry a proton pack. Thank God, Potts told Empire magazine. They are murderously heavy, and us OGs are getting on a bit. Civil War, in theaters April 12th. Alex Garland, age 53, once a novelist in the literary brat pack of Martin Amis and Christopher Hitchens, became a renowned highbrow sci-fi director, Ex Machina. In this intellectual action film, the U.S. President, Parks and Recreation's Nick Offerman, age 53, faces the secession of 19 states while a photographer, Kirsten Dunst, gets caught in urban war zones. The First Omen, in theaters April 5th. The sequels to the 1976 horror classic The Omen were hell to sit through. But hopes are high as heaven for this prequel about the world's scariest child, since its stars include Bill Nighy, age 74, and Sonia Braga, age 73, who appears to be a pair of religious figures, but does that mean they're holy, holy? Watch ads, save $546. How streaming TV's new pricing works. Amazon's Prime Video is the latest streaming service to offer a cheaper version with commercials, a boon for bargain hunters. But you must sit through pesky ads, an average of 4 minutes worth per hour on some services, and up to 10 for some Hulu programming. Also, while traditional broadcast shows, with 12 to 15 minutes of ads per hour, block out their plots to align with commercial breaks, streamers often break into shows at random intervals. Netflix promised to put ad blocks only before the titles of new movie releases. And if you watch 3 episodes of a show, the 4th is ad-free. If the ads annoy you, ponder the money you can save. Ripley on Netflix, April 4th. Remember Matt Damon in the 1999 hit film about the talented Tom Ripley, imposter and killer? Now see Andrew Scott, age 47, who shot to fame as the hot priest on TV's Fleabag, as Slippery Ripley in a new series adaptation by Steven Zaillian, age 71, writer of Schindler's List and The Irishman. Elkhorn on INSP, April 11th. At 25, Teddy Roosevelt quit being a New York politician and became a cowboy in Dakota's Badlands. Really. In this series, he faces down gunmen, barroom brawlers, horse thieves, and killer grizzlies. Excellent preparation for a future president. Maryland on PBS Masterpiece, May 5th. If you like Broadchurch or Bad Sisters, try this mystery about estranged siblings, Saran Jones and House of the Dragon's Eve Best, who reluctantly bond while trying to figure out how their mom died on the Isle of Man. Does their mom's eccentric American friend, Greasy Stocker Channing, know the secret? And Fallout on Prime Video, April 12th. Why watch yet another show set in a post-apocalyptic world overrun with mutant creatures? We're eager to see Justified's Walton Coggins, age 52, as a pragmatic bounty hunter called the Ghoul, and Twin Peaks' Kyle MacLachlan, age 65, as Hank, the overseer of an underground vault where wealthy folks hide in comfort until forced to explore the bizarre calamities above ground. This article was written by Tim Apollo. Our next story, also from the Upfront section, What I Know Now. Kelsey Grammer on Being Frasier, The Joys of Fatherhood, and the Perils of Cancel Culture. Catching the Acting Bug. I was in the 10th grade in the show The Little Foxes, playing a 50-year-old guy at age 16, when the thrill first hit me. After my performance, I got a standing ovation. It wasn't just, I love this. You learn to love the kiss of their eyes, and it was a window onto my future. Everybody knows his name. After 35 years embodying Frasier Crane, he's as alive to me as life itself. Day to day, year to year, we've walked the same streets together, although we're very different. Frasier's the fastidious, neurotic Felix Unger to my Oscar Madison. But I adore how he's in it, with his whole heart. Waking up at 69. If this stage was a chapter in a novel, I'd call it rejuvenation. There are more opportunities for me to be delighted than ever before. My 7 children range from age 40 down to 7. With my oldest daughters especially, I missed occasions and wasn't as present as I should have been. Now we're reconnecting, healing. The new batch is a total do-over. We're like a pack. The 3 youngest still sleep in our room, and around 3 a.m. this morning, James, the 7-year-old, rolled over with a little kick, and I thought, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. Wealth is relative. I'm okay with money, but I did get divorced a few times. I pay those debts because, honestly, even if it was twice as much, it would still be cheap. I'm alive and happy, right? Listening to loss. In 2025, it'll be 50 years since my sister was murdered when she was almost 19. I had stowed away some of that pain, but 2 years ago I got a sort of message from her when I started to write a book about the loss, which bubbled up emotions and a sense of faith I had locked away. This voice came that said, I've always been there. Since then, all the good things I had with my sister are more in focus than the bad. Cancel culture. Cancel culture is ridiculous. It's about giving a platform for hatred, singling people out to take them down. I think we can all do better toward one another. We focus so much on difference in this country, red state, blue state, conservative, liberal. But I think we should celebrate how much we all share. Maybe that could move us toward community again rather than silos. The world my granddad introduced me to, a world of service, a world of kindness, that still holds value. The urgency of time. I'm not sad about getting older. I feel better now than ever, honestly. Sometimes, though, that line comes to me from the poem, To His Coy Mistress. At my back I always hear, Time's winged chariot hurrying near. There are things I haven't quite done yet. I do face that ticking clock. As told to David Hockman. Our next story from the Money Saver section, A House Divided. Splitting an inheritance gets complicated. The problem. Married couple John and Tina Vanderjack wanted to know what's fair. Since 2005, the two, both 71, have lived in the Los Angeles house John's mother left to him and his sister, Lisa. Now Lisa, age 69, wants John and Tina to buy out her share. But the math isn't easy. John and Tina have been paying the mortgage, and they've spent money on improvements. How much is owed? Asked Tina. And more important, can they do this and not strain their relationships? The advice? A lot of families will likely face this issue. A 2023 Charles Schwab survey found that 76% of parents plan to leave their home to their children. Those children are better off setting a course of action upon inheriting the home rather than waiting, says Josh Barron, co-founder of Banyan Global Family Business Advisors in Boston. That could mean selling the home on the open market, having one sibling buy the others out, or defining terms of co-ownership. Otherwise, it can get messy, as in the Vanderjack's case. I spoke with several experts, estate planning lawyers, family business consultants, CPAs, and divorce financial planners who specialize in splitting the proverbial pie. They made some important points. First, you need to acknowledge the parents' intent. For Lisa and John's mother, it was to divide assets equally. Second, the value of what Lisa and John inherited has changed. Appraised for $614,000 when the mother died, the house is now valued at $1.8 million, due in part to real estate appreciation and in part to improvements made by John, but not Lisa. And though John and Tina got the benefit of living there, they also have been paying the $250,000 mortgage taken out before his mother's death to finance a renovation. They've also covered taxes, insurance, and everyday maintenance. The question, can we disentangle those things, Barron says. A consensus of sorts formed around the math suggested by Jody D'Agostino, a divorce financial planner at the Falcon Financial Group in New Jersey. Starting with the home's current value, she subtracted the $175,000 remaining on the loan, leaving $1.625 million as the value of the asset being split. Then she subtracted the cost of the improvements John and Tina had made, plus the principal and interest they paid on the mortgage. Dividing the results by two, she got $667,500 as the amount the couple should pay Lisa. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. I'm Joe Bickers, wishing everyone a wonderful week.